this is Chief Judge Janet DeFiore. Over the past few months, the Gender Fairness Committee of the 3rd Judicial District, chaired by former Albany City Court Judge Rachel Kretzer, has produced a documentary about the pioneering women judges of the 7-county 3rd Judicial District. 9 groundbreaking judges were interviewed. Mae D'Agostino, judge of the United States District Court for the Northern District of New York; Catherine Doyle, former surrogate of Albany County; Victoria Graffio, former judge of the New York Court of Appeals; Helena Heath, judge of the Albany City Court; Rachel Kretzer, former judge of the Albany City Criminal Court; Karen Peters, the presiding justice of the Appellate Division 3rd Department; Beverly Tobin, former judge of the Albany County Family Court; Mary Work, former surrogate of Ulster County; and Deborah Young, judge of the Rensselaer County Court. Throughout the month of March, Women's History Month, we will share these interviews through our Amici podcasts. I think you will find the interviews of these trailblazing women to be both enlightening and inspiring.
The increased number of women and people of color on the bench is a tremendous benefit. There's a perception that people have that our justice system will be more fair when our decision makers represent the full spectrum of people in our society.
Welcome to Amici, news and insight from the New York judiciary and the unified court system. For today's program, Dolores Bolden of the Office of Court Administration interviews Albany City Judge Helena Heath. The interview was one of 9 with pioneering woman judges of the 3rd Judicial District. All of the interviews will be posted to Amici and iTunes. Additionally, a video produced from those interviews will be posted to the court system's website and to its YouTube channel. For more information, call me, John Carr, at 518-453-8669.
Okay, so what made you decide to pursue a legal career?
I have a long commitment to being a lawyer, which stemmed from a second grade situation where a teacher asked me to stop sticking up for a kid, pretty much, who she was yelling at. She asked to see me after class because I had stood up and said, Mrs. Lerman, Johnny wasn't talking. And when I went to see her after class, she said to me, Helena, when I need a lawyer, I'll call a legal aid society lawyer. And so obviously I got thinking, I wonder what a lawyer must do that allows me to continue to stand up for when I think something's wrong. That was part of the reason, certainly my influence of my parents, the type of community I grew up in where they were very active in community. I always believed in making sure you would have a voice in things that were not being done properly in our community. We always had that type of family.
Thank you. Okay. It appears your career has been entirely in the public sector. Were there any gender or diversity issues that led you in that direction rather than toward the private sector?
Well, in terms of my decision to focus my career in law on the public service, certainly the interest in making a difference in community. I was very motivated by issues of racial and social justice issues. So for me, it seemed like a natural fit to be involved with anything having to do with policy that and practice of law that would help the underserved or underrepresented. So in that situation, being in government for almost 30 years now, close to 30 years, and the different branches of government, I do think it's a tremendous privilege and you can have a tremendous impact by being an attorney that serves the public in that public sector of our career, of our profession, I mean.
Thank you. Okay, when you were admitted in the late 1980s, what was the environment like for black female attorneys in the Capital Region?
When I went to NYU Law School, the whole focus of that school, certainly why I was attracted to it, was very strong in public service. There was programs, including a Ruth Tilden program scholarship that I got once I got there. My second and third year of law school was based on my commitment to pursuing a career in public service. I got a chance to go into the field and actually work in different agencies, including the Vera Project and other legal aid units. It was very, very important to me to get a real life experience when I was a law student. I was active in the Black Law Students Association at the NYU. We went out and we were mentors to kids that were entering the juvenile justice system, and they got kind of like a probation program called After Care, where we would have to, we could serve as mentors. So I think the representation of people of color at NYU Law School was probably for the 1980s was fairly good. But the point is that when you get to law school and you're aware of what the problems are in society and you want to make a difference, you get involved with the law school environment and perhaps organizations like the Women Law Caucus, organizations like the Black Law Student Association is where you focus your efforts so you can make those impacts.
Thank you. All right. Did you encounter any gender or diversity issues in any of your prior jobs with the Court of Appeals? I think this is just for example, the AG's office, the Executive Department of Legislature.
Being a lawyer coming out of NYU Law School, coming to the Court of Appeals as my first job, was an amazing experience because we saw for the first time a woman on the bench. Judith Kaye was the associate judge at the time, the first female judge. I was very aware of the fact that there needed to be more women in the profession, for sure. I was also fortunate to see Judge Fritz Alexander on the bench at the Court of Appeals at the time when I clerked there. And he was only the second man of color and African-American male to serve in that position. There was a wonderful opportunity to feel like I could do anything I wanted to do in the profession. And when I went to the Attorney General's office, thinking about the issue of gender impact, I just recall that, again, there wasn't an overwhelming amount of female lawyers in the Capital Region at the time. There are more now. There are more women judges than there have ever been before. And there were reactions to coming into the courtroom. You were noticeably, you know, among a few people, lawyers of color, very, very limited number. So while I recognize that to be the case or the situation, it seemed to me that as long as I kept doing the best job, performing a very competent and professional way, I never felt unnecessarily, you know, very blatant negative reactions to me, let's say, because being a female. My experience in being the first woman of color to serve in the Albany City Court bench has been very positive. There are some negative situations that have arisen. I do know that there is often a reaction that someone that looks different than someone that is expected to be the judge is not always greeted with very open arms and welcomeness. I think more to the point of what that means to the system of justice for me to be in this position, I do take my role very seriously and really to heart in terms of my effect on people's lives, the decisions that I have and how it affects people's lives. And being the face of justice, as I would call it, I think it's so important to make that difference where the litigants come before the court and they're not all of one gender, they're not all of one type of race or ethnicity or age. So for them to see decision makers who represent the diversity of who we are as a society is very impactful in a very positive way. And I think every time I think that I've gotten challenged for perhaps or a question as to whether I'll be as competent as any other person serving in the role of judge, my response is simply my performance as a judge, the competency I bring to the bench, the way that I do my job, and the way that I know that people react positively when they have a fair decision maker, because that's what it comes down to, being fair and understanding the different people's experiences as a decision maker is very important. My parents were my initial role models, most impactful. Again, they were community leaders, and they got involved as PTA presidents, or they got involved with the building that I grew up in was a co-op, cooperative residences, and my mother, who is now 88, just finished her term of presidency after two terms of being the president of the board. So she gets involved, and she makes sure that the quality of life for that building and the residents, the shareholders, as they call them, is good quality of life. We are a family that believes in standing up for if you see something's wrong and it needs to be corrected, you stand up and you say something. You complain when there's something to complain about. Being compassionate and understanding people's walks of life, I think, is very important. And the role models that I had in addition to my parents, that really showed me those types of traits in terms of what a judge can do and how important it is to not only be competent in the area of law that you're dealing with, but in terms of your temperament, in terms of your mannerism, in terms of the integrity you have, the fairness in which you in respect in which you treat people. Started with Judge Kay, Judith Kay, and continued with Judge Anthony Cardona and Judge Leslie Stein in more recent years, since I knew her from the Women's Bar Association, has always been a role model, a judicial role model for me as well.
What did the appointment of Judith Kay as Chief Judge and Karen Peters as Presiding Justice mean to you as a woman attorney?
I had a wonderful experience of being hired by the Court of Appeals to be what's called essential staff attorney. Mm-hmm. So being a law clerk for all of the judges of the court, and then getting to observe oral argument in the courtroom. Mm-hmm. And walking in and seeing Judge Kay on the bench when I was a young attorney right out of law school, seeing her there was a magnificent way of showing me that I could do anything I wanted to do in this profession, and that in planting that seed of possibility with young attorneys, which I then in turn do present day for others that are coming up behind me, it's very positive. It can give you a whole sense of that you do belong in this position. And she was outstanding in both her terms of her legal skills, her temperament, and the passion she had for justice in our society. And Judge Karen Peters, likewise, has that type of passion and commitment to ensuring that our justice system is fair and responsive to people's needs, that she is clearly a trailblazer herself in being the first female to serve on the Supreme Court in the third judicial department. So I had the pleasure of working with her during her years of campaigning for that position. And her present position of being our PJ for our department is incredibly impactful. And again, she's a human being that cares about other people and believes very deeply in the aspects of diversity and the benefits to having a more diverse society, profession, and judiciary.
Thank you. You were the first Albany City Court female judge of color.
Correct, yes.
So how did you position yourself to get a shot
Yes. Becoming a judge was not something that I thought about initially when I started my career. Being a young person since second grade, wanting to be a lawyer, that was something that I thought about, being a lawyer. It was not until I was practicing before Judge Beverly Tobin, Albany County Family Court judge, now retired, when I was in the position of being able to do some law guardian work. So I was an appointed law guardian position while I was working at the Assembly. And when I went before Judge Tobin, it was during the years when she was leaving the bench soon after, and I was asked by someone, did you ever consider being a judge? And I said, no, I never. And he said to me, very matter of fact, Helena, no one's going to come up to you and tap you on your shoulder and say, we want you to be judge. You have to look into it. You have to make your interest known. There are certain things you do to get out there and see if there'll be some support for that idea. So pursuing it that way, then understanding a little bit more about the political system, I had the benefit of serving as a Democratic committee person, which was a position that I served in for almost 5 years, which got me into the community, ringing bells, asking people to sign petitions for other candidates. I worked on a few judicial races, including Judge Stein's race, including Judge Peters' race. So I got exposure that way to understanding a little bit more about elective politics. Becoming an appointed judge is another path, different from elective, but it comes down to a similar steps you have to take. In that case, you have to get the support of the appointing authority, who happens to be the mayor for the city court judges. And gender played a role, I think, in thinking about what my timing was. There's 5 judges on the city court bench. The person that was coming off the bench was a male. There was no females on the bench. And I think the mayor thought to have about the issue of having a more gender-diverse bench. So that became a positive to be able to present yourself as a female with a certain number of years of experience and qualities for him to consider appointing me as a city court judge. And then when you're appointed as a judge, is a foundation piece for then running for election. You're already in the position of judgeship when you have to ring the bells and ask people to not only sign your name on the ballot to get on the or on the petition to get on the ballot, you're asking people to keep you in the position you're already in. And unless there's some compelling reason for them to throw you off the bench, so to speak, there's often a very positive piece to having been appointed first prior to seeking election for the position.
Thank you. Okay. How has the increased presence of women impacted the legal profession and the judiciary?
The increased number of women and people of color on the bench is a tremendous benefit. There's a perception that people have that our justice system will be more fair when our decision makers represent the full spectrum of people in our society. There is just the message sent that the more women who are in these positions means that women are clearly showing they can perform this job and excel in this role, that the idea of a man being the only gender that can handle being a judge, that stereotype, that notion can be dispelled. And to see more women in this position also allows younger women and other women to also pursue that path with a sense of confidence that this can be something that they can achieve. So in addition to the importance of the perception of fairness, when you have decision makers who have different life experiences and they bring those life experiences to the table, we make decisions as judges every day where we have to think, is something logical? If I was in a child care situation, would I be late for court if I had nobody else to handle the child? Perhaps a woman experiences that more often than a man about what happens when child care plans fall through. Is there other areas of life where, based on the different life experience you bring to the table, you would bring important considerations to the table which would inform your decision and make it a stronger one? So yes, it's more than just the sense of perception of fairness. It's substantive justice as well. It's substantive aspects of what diverse people bring to the decision-making process.
What changes have you observed in the way women attorneys are treated in court?
When I was a young female attorney coming up about 28 or 9 years ago, one of the things I noticed about being a female attorney was the sense that you had to make sure, in terms of your dress and perhaps the way you presented yourself, that you were more focused on looking like a male or fitting in with men. I can't say I had an overwhelming that didn't affect me to the degree that it may affect others. I think I started thinking, well, these shoulder pads are not working for me. I think I'm going to have to loosen up this attire a little bit. And maybe I'm going to wear suit colors other than gray and black. But certainly there was a breaking in period for my generation of being a young attorney where I had to be I had to be conscientious of saying, am I prepared to be who I am myself, not trying to pattern myself after the male attorney? Mm-hmm. There are some differences now with respect to a female's role when she walks into a courtroom or when she perhaps meets with a client in conference, that the concern is still, is she going to be as good as a male? There's certainly something that is always there, I think, and realistically may be something that one should just be aware of, not overwhelmed by, but just aware of. And there, unfortunately, from my involvements with the bar associations and having a meeting with one of the committees that I chair called the Diversity and Gender Fairness Committee for the Women's Bar Capital District, a young attorney who's facing experiences that older attorneys face, female attorneys face, such as being complimented on what they look like as the first comment made by someone working in the court, or being referred to as honey or some other word that just the tone can often make you feel that you're not being responded to as the professional that brings all the wisdom and the skills and everything else to the table like any other attorney, but that your gender or your appearance is what's being commented upon. That still is a problem. That's still a concern.
Are there any aspects of how women are treated in the legal profession or the judiciary that you feel still need improvement?
So in terms of areas of improvement that are needed to either raise awareness as to gender issues and sensitivities, I think these discussions that I have seen take place in bar association and community forums, they need to continue. When people experience certain issues, it's still very difficult to often know what is the best response. Is it something that you can let roll off your shoulders, so to speak? Is it rising to a level of sexual harassment? Is it just an inappropriate comment? Is it just something that someone's a little out of touch with the way that they should address a female, let's say, or a person of color that comes before a judge or has a case with an opposing counsel? I think the programs that we can do to make sure that these issues are talked about and that the learning continues will continue to go a long way in resolving some of these problems.
In your time on the bench, are you seeing more women and more minorities appearing in your court as counsel?
So in my 29 years of being both a practicing lawyer in the Capital District area as well as a judge for my now 11-year period approximately, I have seen more women become judges, which has been great. Myself, one of the people that kind of broke a barrier to, or did break a barrier to, ascend to the bench. There have been more, I think, attorneys that have been more involved in different ways, in leadership roles, in bar association roles, which always helps, whether it be the New York State Bar, having female presidents. In fact, we're in the midst of two female presidents back-to-back, the president-elect and the current president are females, and that might be the first time, if not only the second, that that has happened. So there's some opportunity I've seen where the idea of people seeing women in leadership positions has been very positive. But because of the work that I do with respect to with other bar leaders in this area, my co-judge being one, Rachel Kretzer, I have seen through the statistics and the studies that we as a department are still lagging behind with respect to the numbers of women on the bench and the number of people of color on the bench. There's clearly more work that needs to be done.
As you well know, until this year, there had never been a person of color elected to the Supreme Court in the 28-county region that encompasses the third department.
Right.
Would you care to speculate on why that is?
So in recognizing that there has been some progress in terms of the numbers of women and people of color coming on the bench, we have to take a look at what needs to be done more to increase the numbers. And that obviously does require understanding what some of the past issues have been. With respect to what I have seen in being part of the political process to be elected judge, what I saw when I was a committee person, when I was still considered one of the fewer, women were not in large number as Democratic committee people, that there is still a system in place that often, unfortunately, too often, chooses, selects, identifies people who are more like one type of group than the diversity of people that we have in the community. If there's a history where the political party is predominantly male, white males, perhaps even males of a certain ethnicity, whether it be Irish versus Italian, that may be very hard to break down because there's certain history there. There's generations of people that have been in leadership positions as council people or ward leaders, as we call them in the city of Albany, in terms of political leaders. They have to have an openness to, in essence, open the door to say other people who meet the qualifications that are needed to become judge, for example, need to be looked at and considered in the same way as everybody that comes to the table. And then I think it has to go further. It has to be that not only do we acknowledge that there is a person prepared to do the job, that may be a female, maybe a person of color, but that there are benefits to making sure that we have people in those positions, have a diversity of people in those positions. And trying to have chairs of Democratic parties or Republican Democratic chairs, excuse me, and having people that have leadership positions as chairs of political parties, having them have that type of commitment to saying it'll make sense for everything. It'll make sense because it'll be a better judiciary with a diversity of decision makers. The person might be more electable when there are women that vote strong numbers, and often with an eye towards, can I vote and elect a woman? Because as long as, again, that person is viewed as being competent to do the job, it is a plus that if there's a lack of gender diversity, for example, it's a plus to increase that diversity. People that are voting for people are going to often, I think, see that as a benefit. So it's a combination of ensuring that people are committed to those same goals. And practically speaking, it's perhaps the only reason why you can make the argument when there is a whole field of men running for something, for example. Hey, have you ever considered that we should offer this candidate up as qualified for the job, and she will be a woman that helps diversify that particular office? That's a positive that you have to hopefully have a decision maker accept as being important.
Okay, going forward, what is the significance of Christina Riva's election last year as the first person of color to be elected to the Supreme Court in this region?
The work that has to be done to increase diversity continues. There is the information that I am aware of that the numbers of women and women, people of color in the third judicial department is lacking behind the three other departments. To have a first person of color, a first woman in a position helps break down a barrier. And then the hope, of course, is that others will, once that door is open, others will follow, or that person who is the first does a job competently, well, brings all the benefits that is hoped for that the person would bring. And that will, again, I think, allow for the decisions to be made that other people should be placed in that position, identified as candidates, elected to those positions, appointed to those positions. So we just did have in our third judicial department, we just did have third judicial district, specifically, the first African-American female to become a Supreme Court justice. Mm-hmm. So that barrier is now broken with more opportunities that are needed to be extended to people that come after her. And I think that the more, as I've seen it in my experience as a judge, the more that people get to see that no matter what you look like in terms of their concerns, if they have any concerns, that a female can't be as strong as a judge as a male, or that a person of color can't be as strong as a judge as a Caucasian person or person of European descent, that notion, that stereotype will fall, will be dispelled. And that's what needs to happen. And substantively, that's what needs to be demonstrated, that there is absolutely a wonderful opportunity to ensure that the society is a fairer society because we have decision makers as judges who are rendering fair and impartial decisions. And it's very important that we have that goal met.
Any tips for young women considering a career in law or hoping to become a judge?
So I appreciate being able to share my thoughts on what it might take, what are the keys to success in a woman seeking to be a lawyer or a judge. And it is first looking at whether, as a young high school student, perhaps, like I had the opportunity to do, become an intern. Intern with a lawyer, intern with a judge. Find out if it's a professional path that really makes sense for the person. Is it a good fit? Meet people who are in the profession. Speak to them about their experiences professionally and personally dealing with the challenges of work-life balance and the professional challenges that they may face. And then by meeting people that are in the field, you often have the opportunity to get thought of in a good light, and relying on people who you meet. Like I was able to meet the person I interned with as a high school student, the lawyer. He wrote a letter of recommendation for me later on when I was going into law school. There's references you can get that help you then in later steps along the way of accomplishing certain career goals. Also, specifically when it comes to becoming a judge, while it might sound like a good thing to do or something that someone is interested in, it takes a real soul searching about whether this is something you really want to do from beginning to end in terms of in the jurisdictions that I'm in, you have to run for office, be elected. There are some judgeships that are appointed only. But we have, for example, in the elective office, there's campaigning, there's ringing doorbells, there's getting involved and putting yourself out there in literature and being able to speak to people and say, hey, look at all the great things that I can bring to the table. It's not an easy thing to do for most people. And it's only when you have the support of people around you that can help you learn the ropes, because everyone's doing it for the first time, it's your first time. And that's what I found, that you have to have a good group of people that you can turn to and get support from. So setting it up as not just being a goal of I want to be a judge, but understanding what will it take, what does it mean, and allowing yourself to ask the hard question, is this really going to be the right fit for me, will go a long way to then when you jump in and decide, yep, I'm going to go for this, I'm going to know what I have to do, I'm going to get support lined up, I'm going to do it for the right reasons, I'm going to be able to speak to why I want to be a judge, what impact I want to make, and then asking for support from people who might serve as your role models, as your mentors, and making sure you're clear on what that path is all about is really, I strongly recommend that being the steps that a person takes.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Amici. If you have a suggestion for a topic on Amici, call John Carr at 518-453-8669 or send him a note at jcaher@nycourts.gov. In the meantime, stay tuned.